Hey guys, welcome back to our podcast, A Court of Heaven and Hell. I'm Lauren, aka Heaven.
And I'm Ellie, I'm also known as Hell.
And if you don't already know, we are a book podcast currently focusing on the romantasy series, A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. In this episode, we will be covering A Court of Mist and Fury with chapters 46 through 50. Today's episode will include plot summaries of each chapter and discussions about characters, foreshadowing, world building, before we get into our theories and Maas-verse connections. With that being said, at this time, I want to go ahead and give a spoiler warning. We are fully diving in, so if you have not read all of the books in this series, then please come back and join us once you have. If you have read all of the books in this series, you will be fine until we get to our theories portion, where I will go ahead and give another big spoiler warning before we get into her other series, including the newly released House in Flame and Shadow.
We also want to go ahead and give y'all a content warning. Please see our show notes below for content and trigger warnings. We are an explicit podcast and we talk about adult themes, so please keep that in mind. Check out our past episodes where we deep dive into the rest of the Sarah J. Maas universe. We have several episodes out about all three Crescent City books, the first ACOTAR book, and we're almost finished with A Court of Mist and Fury. Please go ahead and take some time to rate and review us, or if you're watching this video on YouTube, please like and subscribe, and make sure you let us know your thoughts in the comments. Now let's go ahead and get into the plot summary of Mist and Fury. So starting with chapter 46, Feyre and the Inner Circle are at the Illyrian camps overnight. Cassie reports to them that he got one of the Illyrian women who is supposed to be training to admit that she hasn't received a lesson in 10 days because of the chores they're being assigned. We learn that Mor is to go back to the hewn city tomorrow. Rhysand tells Feyre that she can share a bedroom with Mor that night, but that leaves Feyre wanting to be with him as she feels like a traitor. The next day, as they're still waiting word from Azriel, who is monitoring the Mortal Queens, Rhysand and Feyre go deep into the Illyrian forest to train. They plan to stay at an inn since they will be far away from the camps. As Feyre is getting ready to train her fire, she hears someone's voice say Feyre and turns around, and it's Lucien, which four Spring Court sentinels.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, chapter 47. Lucien tells Feyre that they have been hunting for her for months, and she doesn't like the use of that word, fair.
Yeah.
What the fuck? He says Tamlin is sorry, and so is he. Feyre tells him that she is not going back to Tamlin, and Lucien questions if Rhysand is controlling her mind. Feyre transforms into an Illyrian with wings as she tells him he gave up on her and sided with Tamlin and Ianthe, and that the girl he knew died under the mountain. She gives him a message to tell Tamlin that if he sends anyone else into these lands, she will demonstrate exactly what the darkness has taught her. Lucien turns his sentinels and himself away before telling Rhysand that his court is dead. Rhysand is impressed that Feyre could shapeshift into an Illyrian. She goes back into her high fey form as Rhysand flies him away, telling her he is surprised Lucien never stepped in with Tamlin, who was treating her badly, and kisses her forehead. Chapter 48, Rhysand and Feyre arrive at the inn, which is really small and only has one tiny room available with one bed.
Ooh.
Oh my god.
Ooh. Oops, sorry, okay. Groping.
Rhysand goes to get them dinner. Feyre thinks about how Tamlin ignored her note and how she is upset that Lucien didn't help her when she was at the Spring Court. Rhysand arrives with food and a bottle of wine. He has an idea in his head, I think. Should I get a little romance in? She asked him if he would have let her go with Lucien, and he said it would have been her choice, but if he forced her to go, he would tear the world apart for her. Feyre and him give each other one thought each to exchange, and they admit their feelings for each other. They said they should go to bed, but we know that's not going to be happening. Basically, the rest of it is a spicy scene. I'm not going to do a play-by-play of what happens, but
don't worry, guys.
Snuggling. He puts his hands in places. So yes, that's the first spicy scene of the book.
We'll go a little bit more into depth about it in the later section. Or I will. I've been waiting on this, okay? Moving on to chapter 49. After both of them finally getting a peaceful night of sleep, Feyre wakes in Rhys's wings. but everything isn't the blissfulness she expected. She asks him why he made the bargain with her, and he simply says to mess with Amarantha, and she knows he'd sacrifice anything for his people. Feyre questions if everything they did last night was real, but from the feeling between her legs, she knows it had to be. She decides acting like it didn't might be the easier way forward because she can't handle the alternative. They fly around and practice Feyre's power all day, and shit is definitely awkward between them. When they're done for the day, Feyre can tell Rhys's thoughts are distant. She asks him about it, and he tells her he needs to tell her one more story. She can tell he's hesitant, but she promises not to walk away. As he begins to tell her, he's shot from the sky by dozens of arrows. This might not be an issue, but these aren't normal arrows. They're made of ash and covered in poison. Rhys is able to use a blast of power to get Feyre out of the line of fire and roars as he falls to the earth. Feyre is able to use her air shield to stop her fall, but it hurts like a bitch. She scrambles down and reorients herself, searching for Rhys. She can't find him and tries to reach down the bond, only to come up empty-handed. Feyre is pissed. She begins winnowing through the forest, determined to find him. She makes it back to the place they were shot down and collects some of the ash arrows littering the area. She finds where Rhys went down and she can smell him. Putting her hunting skills to use, she tracks him to the Illyrian Mountains. There she can tell they split into two groups to try to throw her off. But unfortunately for them, Feyre's smart, and there's a slight second scent she picks up on. Her. She finds them in a cave hidden in the mountains, and when she arrives, she's horrified to hear the sounds of him being whipped in the state that he's in. In a moment of complete badassery, Feyre winnows in and kills all of them, one by one, before they even know what hits them. Feyre pulls him down from his shackles, saying that they need to winnow home, but Rhys is too weak. Winnowing with Rhys is a task, but Feyre gathers his strength and winnows them to a small cave she found on her journey earlier. She can't get them home, but at least it's safe here. Knowing she has to get the arrows out or he won't heal, and that the process will be painful for him, she begins to distract him with information of her life before Prithian. She's able to get them all out, and Rhys declares, "You saved me," before passing out. Chapter 50. Rhys is in bad shape and running a fever. Feyre is drained from using so much magic the night before and knows she can't make it to the Illyrian camp, especially with Rhys. Having no knowledge of how to help him and not willing to risk waiting for Cassian or one of the others to find them, Feyre takes matters into her own hands. She heads into the forest to snare the cereal. After a couple of hours, she is indeed able to catch it. The cereal gives her two questions, and she immediately asks four. What's the poison?
Bloodbane.
Where is the cure?
In the woods.
What is the cure?
Your blood.
And how much am I supposed to give him?
A couple of mouthfuls should do.
Wait, why was that kind of good? Oh, that's great. Because, like, literally during the graphic audios, the fucking cereal voice is so fucking
good.
It's
on point. Oh. It's on point. I was like,
it's perfect.
After assisting her, it demands to be let go, and Feyre does, while thinking it could probably have escaped on its own, and wonders if it was a test of honor. She frees, then thanks it, but the cereal isn't done spilling the tea yet. It casually drops that if she wants to speed up her mate's healing, there's a special flower he can chew on. Yes, you heard me right. Mate. Feyre catches this too, and she is pissed. She finds the flower and takes it back to Rhys, throwing it at him. She gives him her blood and immediately gets to questioning him. He tells her he's known that they were mates since under the mountain when Amarantha took her life. He felt the bond snap into place after they were freed. Feyre remembers when he looked shocked and vanished. He reveals Mor and Amarin know, and Cassian and Az guess it's true. He didn't tell her because she was in love with another man, and then she was healing from her trauma. He was debating telling her before they were shot down. Feyre is too upset to hear Rhys through. He pleads, but she demands he take her back to camp. He gathers all of his strength and does. And finally, in chapter 51, too weak to make it in the house, they land outside, and Mor and Cass immediately come out to check on them. Cass sees Feyre is all right and goes to Rhys, but Mor immediately knows Feyre is upset. Feyre asks her to take her somewhere far away, and Mor hesitates, but does as she's asked. She takes her to a cabin in the mountains and tells her she can stay here. It's warded, so no one can get in except family. Feyre asks if she can get in because she's Rhys's mate, and Mor says, yes, and ask how she found out. Feyre tells her what happened, and Mor tries to tell her how happy she makes Rhys, but Feyre isn't hearing it. She just wants peace and quiet to think. Moore tells Feyre she'll be back to check on her in 3 days and leaves her to her solitude. And that is the end of part two.
We're going to go ahead and get into our character discussions. As you all know, most of these chapters this week was really just focused on Rhysand and Feyre. Well, there's not too many characters to talk about, but there are a few that we're going to bring up before we bring them two into the conversation.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and start with Moore. Moore definitely has a great moment here where she proves her friendship to Feyre by doing as she asked and taking her to a secluded place. It shows like the difference between Ianthe and Moore, which is something that Feyre has commented on a few times. Moore is a real friend of Feyre. Moore obviously is family with Rhysand. She's known Rhysand longer. He's her high lord. She had every reason to take Rhysand's side, but she still like looked at Feyre, saw that she needed help, and immediately helped her without question. And she did try to stand up for Rhys a little bit to Feyre, but at the end of the day, she was like, this is what you need. I'm your friend. I'm going to help you achieve this. So shout out to Moore there. We love her at this point. Still yes. Love her, but I know there's questions about her in the fandom.
Yeah, there definitely is. Just, I think we don't know enough about her yet. And I think that's where maybe the water is a little murky with her. So yeah. Like, okay, interesting. But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. I don't want to talk bad about this character, but it's fine. Okay, Lucien. Okay. If y'all don't know where Lucien stands, so you're not going to hear hate from us, but definitely doesn't have his best moments in this chapter.
No,
oh my God. I'm like, Lucien, no. It's okay. He comes around. He comes around. It's all that matters. Yeah. But he is so fucking loyal to Tamlin still, and it bothers the shit out of me. I'm like, Lucien, come on, bro.
Yeah.
I know you're a good person.
He gets there, but yeah, like you said, this is just not his strongest moment. Even Rhys is like, I would have thought that at least Lucien would have stood up for you. At least Lucien would have said something. And it's like he's so stuck in this loyalty and this commitment to Tamlin that he just can't get his head out of his own ass. Like, bro, it's okay to call people that you love out when they're not doing the right shit. You don't have to do it in front of a bunch of people. You don't have to be a dick about it. But you could tell the people that we love and care about, like, this is supposed to be your best friend, your high lord. If you're not going to tell him, then who is? And you're also supposed to be Feyre's friend. So come on, man, get it together. And him trying to accuse Rhys of like, what did you do to her? And it's like, come on, bro. Look at her now. Look how healthy and good she looks. And think about back to how she looked when she left your care, the care of your high lord. Just put two and two together.
I'm like, okay, I'm assuming that from Lucien's point of view, he really probably does think that Rhysand stole her away or something. I get that, but I'm just like, dude, why haven't you called out Tamlin for literally locking her in? It bothers me so much, but it's okay. I love him. It's fine. I'm gonna forget about it.
I do get what you mean, but they probably think that Rhysand has done something to steal her away. And I also understand that they probably thought the letter that she wrote was under duress or whatever. But it's just like, you're seeing her with your own two eyes. You can see how good she looks, especially compared to how she was looking before she left the Spring Court. Then also she's telling you with her own mouth, I'm not going back. And he's trying to like jump at her and touch her so he can teleport her back. Dude, I love Lucien. I love Lucien. But this is just, he's got a couple more episodes of us talking about him where he's not in his best form before he really gets it together. And I just, it's something I'm thinking about now. I hope that the mating thing isn't what really makes him realize how wrong he is. I know that she goes back to the Spring Court and does that whole shindig or whatever at the end of this book and the beginning of the next book. And it does take all the way through that part for him to get it together. But I don't know. I'm just like, how are you still not seeing what's going on here, Lucien? Are you really that convinced that Rhys is such a bad guy that you're not seeing and hearing what's in front of you?
Also with Lucien, he is really showing his fiery side because he basically tells Rhysand to go fuck himself. Him and his court are fucked is what he basically says to him. And I was, okay, Lucien.
Yeah. That part is, I can forgive him because he thinks he's doing the right thing. Yeah, that part is him standing up to Rhys because everybody knows how terrifying Reese's or whatever. But right. Lucien also feels like he's in the right. He's like, you stole away the Bride of Spring. We have every right to go to war with you, basically. And so he's still thinking he's doing what's right. I like it when he stands up for himself.
Me too.
Not for Tamlin, but for himself.
I'm not super for him telling Reese that, given the circumstances. But I was proud of Lucien. I was kind of like, okay, Lucien, I forgot that he said that to him. So I was like,
yeah,
let's go. Anyway, I hope we see more. I need to see him and Elaine have more of that backbone, because I feel like they're always around really strong characters. They don't really get the chance to maybe speak up like that all the time. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I love these type of moments.
Yeah. Okay. Especially knowing what we know about Lucien going forward is just he is really the heir of a High Lord. And so that power is within him. He just has let himself be this, not even side character, but in the back of Tamlin, just standing there being his support when really Lucien's a leader and he has that in him. And I like to see a little bit of that come out. I like to see it. Speaking of return characters, we get to see the Suriel again in this stretch of chapters. I also love the Suriel. Though it's supposed to be this menacing creature, you just know that it's really not at the end of the day. Even Feyre questions if the Suriel let itself be caught because it knew that she needed to get this information. She points out that like when it's snared on the ground, it's like demands that she let it go. But really, it probably could have gotten out of the snare itself. And she was like, is this a test of my honor? And when she lets it go, I love the way that it just slips it in there. It's like, oh, yeah, and if you want to help your mate heal faster, then you can let him chew on this flower. And she was like, wait, what did you just say? Like, my what? And I just love that. You just know that the Suriel loves this shit. It's loving the spilling the tea out here in Prithia and just shocking the shit out of Feyre. But yeah. And even the Suriels, you look way different, Feyre. You're looking good from the last time I saw you. I love that. I love the Suriel.
Me too. I absolutely fucking love how Sarah J. Maas wrote that.
Yeah.
And that's like how we find out that Rhysand and Feyre are mates. It was so good. Even rereading it for thousands of time, it's like, when he says, if you wish to heal your mate, I'm like, oh my God, it's so exciting. It makes me so excited. And then the Suriel is just, oh, you didn't know? I love it.
Literally.
I love it.
The drama, it is stirring the pot. And also, shout out to Alice at this point, because Feyre doesn't have shit but a cloak. And Alice was the one who told her if you had just given it a cloak, it probably would have just helped you out for free. So shout out to Alice at this point. But the Suriel stirring the pot is like one of the best parts of the whole ACOTAR series. I just love that character so much. And it only pops up a few times, but when it does, it's really impactful. And I want to talk about the next time it pops up. Goes.
Same.
It's really, really impactful.
That shit just destroyed me.
Fuck Ianthe. Anyways, we'll talk about it more. We'll talk about it more when we get there. But yeah, the Suriel, at this part, it's iconic. It's iconic. It's just like you said, the way it just slips it in there about the mate. It tells her, like, you can ask me two questions. And she just, like, straight up is like, what? Wow? When? Where? Like, asking all these questions. And it's, oh, yeah, by the way, if your mate needs help. Oh, he didn't tell you? You didn't know? I told you to stay with the High Lord. I love it. I love it.
Oh, fuck. We all need a Suriel in our life.
Yeah, seriously. No joke. All right. And then let's go ahead and get into the main show, the main part of this section of chapters. Really, majority, if not all, of the focus is on our two main characters, Feyre and Rhysand. This is such an important part to their story. They have hinted at it up until this stretch of chapters, and then in the next stretch of chapters is when we really figure shit out, and I cannot wait for next week's episode. But in this week's chapters, we still get the juicy. Like, we get so much good stuff here. We get their first little official moment together. The flirting has been flirting. We get more than flirting in this stretch of chapters.
So Feyre, in these spans of chapters, she finally admits to Rhysand how she feels about him, but it's so hard for her to admit because she still feels like it's too soon for her to move on from Tamlin. So she calls herself a traitor. She's still having a really hard time with being okay with her having feelings towards him, but she took that big step and expressing her feelings, which is awesome. Good for her. Fuck Tamlin. He ain't shit. Okay, let's move on from him.
God, he ain't shit.
Okay.
Dude, I can't even talk about him because then I just...
Yes.
Lord knows in the last episode, I'm going to be ranting again.
So she also really finds her voice as well when she stands up to Lucien. She literally threatens him.
Yeah.
She threatens him. She threatens Tamlin. She's like, if you come back here, I'm going to show you exactly what I can do now. Which, like, good for you, sis. But please don't hurt Lucien. I don't think she actually would. But please don't hurt him.
I think if he really tried to take her, she would have defended herself. I do. If he had somehow been able to touch her, I think she'd have fought for her life, bro. She was not going back to Spring willfully.
Fair. That's fair. That's so fair. Oh, my gosh. And then during the scene with Lucien, she has an iconic moment where she's finally able to shapeshift. And she has been so scared of her shapeshifting powers, knowing that it comes from fucking Tamlin.
Yeah.
But she's a baddie and she turns into an Illyrian warrior, which is super cool. Love that for her. Really wish she could have been in that form when she was giving birth, but it's totally fine.
Yeah. Oh, God. I know. Look. We'll talk about that another day.
Anyway.
I can't. I love Feyre in this stretch of chapters. She's really coming into her own. We definitely get some good moments from her coming up as well. But in this stretch of chapters, between when she is confronting Lucien and she just has that iconic moment of turning into darkness, basically, and hits him with the famous quote, I love it. And then also when Rhys gets attacked and she goes to save him for the first time. She's not being saved. She's the person doing the saving. And she is pissed that they hurt him. And she just goes off. And she even acknowledges, she's like, I'm killing people, but I don't feel regret about this. This doesn't feel like it did when I was under the mountain and I had to, you know, kill those innocent people. She's like, these people fucking deserve it. And I will do anything I have to do to protect the people that I love. And I'm like, Morally Gray Feyre has entered the chat. Mm-hmm. She don't give a fuck, bro. She's like, you hurt my man, okay? Feyre really comes into her own in these stretch of chapters. And all that training she's been doing with Cassian is paying off because she's a badass. Winnowing all over the place, slicing throats with ash arrows, stabbing people. Shout out to her hunting abilities, too, because when she's looking for Rhys, a lot of her tracking abilities and all that stuff that she learned from her time in the mortal realms really comes into play and helps her during this part. Yeah. Really love Feyre here.
I really want a Cassian to train me in how to fight with a sword. What the fuck? Why is that not a thing?
There's people out there that can train you. They're probably not going to be Cassian, but yeah, they could train you.
So true.
Yeah. Let's be real about what we're asking here. There's definitely people out there who could train you in sword work and sword play, but they probably are not Cassian, if I had to guess.
It's totally fine.
It's totally fine. They're fictional men for a reason, okay? Men like that can't exist in real life. Otherwise, there'd be too much power.
There would be too much power. Also, fictional men, IRL, mostly problematic. So.
Exactly.
There's that.
You said
Not all of them, but most of them.
90% of these motherfuckers would be an issue if you ran into them in real life. It's like Morally Gray 100%. Is gray on paper. It's not so great in the real world. But yeah. And then let's talk about Rhys, the other part of this duo. I love Rhys. Rhys is like almost having the opposite of Feyre right now. For all of the badassery and like awesome moments that Feyre is having, Rhys is just like in a corner in his mind, like, how do I tell her? How do I tell her that she's my mate? I need to tell her. I love this girl. I want to be with this girl, but I don't know how to tell her. He is struggling. He's struggling with the secret. He loves her, but also Feyre's not making it the easiest on him because I know she's just trying to protect herself. And she's also, because he hasn't been 100% honest with her, she can't come from a place of having that knowledge. So when she says these things, she doesn't really know what she's saying. But all these little things that she's saying to Rhys are making him feel even more like, I don't want to put this mating bond on her. This girl doesn't even know what she wants. She just wants a distraction. She just wants a good time. She thinks I'm a mess. She doesn't really like me. Like, why would she want to be hunted? Why would she want to be in danger? Who would choose me? And Feyre's unknowingly making it worse, but that's also his fault because he's not telling her the truth. And I don't know. I feel so bad for this portion of them at this point. And even like when they finally have that moment and Feyre finally gets what she wants, she doesn't come out and say, hey, by the way, this is what I want. She's like, I just want a distraction. It's like, girl, literally 4 chapters ago, you were talking about how if Rhys was willing to do this, you'd be willing to do it with him. But now all of a sudden you're like, I want a distraction. I just want something fun. It's like, tell this man what you want. Tell this man what you want so you guys can get past this. And also, Rhys, be honest with her. Tell her what you want. This is like a borderline miscommunication trope. And
I was going to say, just fucking talk to each other.
Just talk to each other. Seriously, how many times in books would things just be so much faster? Like, you could knock off 100 pages if these people would just fucking talk to each other.
It's fine, because honestly, keep it miscommunicated, because I'm going to read it.
That's true. I'm here for the drama.
Me too.
I'm here for the burn, for the drama, for the tension. I eat that shit up. Me too. So, yeah. But it's also, just tell her you love her. It's like in The Little Mermaid, I think. It's Scuttle, like, takes her. Yes. Just tell her. Like, it's, come on, dude. Fuck. Somebody's got to do it. But yeah, Rhys is really hard on himself. And we know why. We found out a couple chapters ago, too, that he feels responsible for the death of his mother and sister. He's still carrying a lot of trauma about that. And I think that definitely plays into why he's so worried about Feyre, feeling like just being with him could get her hurt, basically, because you could be hunted down. Any children that we have in the future could be hunted for how powerful they are. And it's happened to me before. I've lost people that I love simply because I'm as powerful as I am. And so I think that's where some of that hesitancy comes in. And then this is a good place to talk about this, but I do feel like Feyre was not fair about the whole mate thing and she overreacted. I do also see where she's coming from, but yeah. To me, that wasn't Feyre's greatest moment. It's one thing to say, I need space, I need time to think about this, but she didn't do that. She basically had a tantrum. She forced Rhys, who she knew was hurt, to winnow her back to this place that's super far away. As soon as she gets there, she doesn't even acknowledge that he's speaking to her. She's just more, take me away from here, and just disappears for days and doesn't say anything. I get that it was shocking. I get that maybe you need time to process. I understand that you may be upset, but that just plays back into the miscommunication thing of y'all need to talk, okay? He's telling her right now is basically what he tells her later, but she just can't. She's not in a place to process it right now. And because at the end of the day, as messed up as it is that he lied to her, Rhys is also right about a lot of the things that he said. She was in love with another man. She was set to literally marry another man. When he did finally get her away from another man, he didn't want to step in and be homewrecker or whatever. When he finally was like, oh, she's not with him anymore. She doesn't want to be with him. She was broken. That was not the time for him to be like, hey, by the way, like, me and you, we're going to have kids one day. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, he did everything right. So while I understand the shock, I just like wish she would have handled it a little bit better. But she's fucking 20 years old, so.
Yeah, she is so young. I'm just like, that's a good point. I don't know. I'm like, how would I react in that situation? I'm just saying, if like a really hot like shadow daddy was living with him, we just had our first sexual encounter. And then I found out he's my mate, I'd be like,
I was about to say something outlandish. I know this is an adult podcast, but I'm like, girl, he literally finger banged you yesterday. Just do you care? Are you upset by this? This is the best news you've gotten all week.
It was better than Tamlin's was, is all I'm saying. Know that for a fucking fact.
You're over here thinking the Surreal told me to stay with the High Lord. You're still over here thinking that was Tamlin. I'd have been relieved. I'd have been like, thank God. It wasn't bad, dude.
You're telling me my mate is the most powerful man ever?
The most beautiful?
And he's attractive. And he likes me.
Come on.
And he's rich.
Rich as fuck. Powerful as fuck. Hot as fuck. You're really that upset about this? Come on. And we know she's not because, like I said, 3 chapters later, we know what goes down. Okay. So it's okay. I get it. She's like, you promised me you would never lie to me. Did he lie to you? Yes, technically.
You're just withholding information.
Didn't tell you the whole truth. But like I said, I also understand why he didn't. And it's so unfortunate that he was literally about to before they just got shot at the sky. I will say maybe he should have told her the night at the inn when they were, before they started canoodling. But I think he didn't, because when he asked her what she wanted, she was like, I just want fun and I want a distraction. And he was like, oh, now's probably not a time to be like, I'm looking at my wife. So it's, I don't know when he was supposed to tell her. I don't know. Maybe at the Hewn City. But then they had that argument. I feel like he was going to tell her there. But then when he took her to the lake and they started talking, they got to that argument and she was like, and that's why you're so scared to show your friends who you really are. And he was like, God damn, like, I can't win for losing. I don't know. I like Feyre. I love Rhys, obviously. I understand why he was struggling so hard with this secret of his. I get it. I get it.
I get it, too. If I was a fairy princess and I had mates, and my mate that I knew was my mate was in a different relationship, they just got out, I wouldn't be like, her, I'm your mate. I wouldn't do that. That's like a weird sliding into the DMs. It's trying to be like, hey.
Yeah.
It's fucking creepy, to be honest. I think he did the right thing not telling her. Because honestly, if he told her earlier on, hey, I'm your mate, she would have freaked out even fucking more. She would have done something worse than just locking herself in a cabin for a few fucking weeks. But
yeah, she might have left Prithian. Who knows what she would have done. Yeah. She might have gone to a different court. Who knows? But I feel like for all intents and purposes, I feel I understand why Rhys did what he did. And I wish that Feyre had just taken a second to breathe and think about it and really talk to him. And then after they talked, if she had still been like, look, I still need more time to process this. I need some time by myself.
Yeah.
Go and have that time by yourself, but at least hear the man out, because everything he was saying was making sense, but she was just not in the place mentally to hear it. Like I said, she is very young and she hasn't really experienced much of the world. And her first boyfriend was not really a boyfriend. Her second boyfriend was a complete piece of shit who abused her. And her third boyfriend, she just found out, is her husband, and she doesn't even have a say in it. So give her some grace. But yeah, she'll get there. She'll get there. But yeah, guys, that was our character discussions. What a fun one. I cannot wait for next week's episode.
Next week is going to be good.
Next week's going to be good. Really, the next three episodes are going to be pretty.
Yes. I'm so excited for the next few episodes.
I guess it's only...
It's like the best part of the books.
Literally. Oh, okay. All right, guys. Let's get into some foreshadowing, world building, themes, that kind of stuff. I don't really know if there's a lot of world building in this part, but let's talk about it.
I don't know if this means anything important. It might not, but I thought it was interesting. So in one of the first chapters of the section of the book, when Cassian is telling the inner circle how he was checking in on the women who are training with to be Illyrian warriors, he says that him and Mor both say that 3 out of 10 Illyrian women training are actually good and are wanting to train. And I was like, okay, there's a number 3, which pops up a lot. But I'm also like, interesting, because I don't know if this means anything, but it's, we do get 3 Valkyries later on. And maybe that's like a little bit of foreshadowing that there is going to be some like a trio that's going to come eventually and become these badass warrior women, which literally happens. Love that. But I don't know. I caught that and I thought it was interesting.
I feel like it's even possible foreshadowing that eventually, obviously we haven't gotten here yet, but eventually there will be a force of Illyrian women that are an elite warrior unit that are the Valkyries. And they will probably be led by the 3 Valkyries that we know right now, especially... Oh, God, I cannot wait in my mind. I'm really excited to see. We know that there's Pegasus in this world. We know that the Valkyries ride into them on battle. I really cannot wait. I really hope that we get to see a unit of Valkyries riding into battle on Pegasus, and that all of that is everything I need it to be, because I just would eat that shit up. So, yeah.
That better be the best scene I've ever read in my entire life. Because I am so ready for it.
I think it will be. I just see it. Nesta leading a group, a force into battle on the back of a Pegasus. Ugh, I would die.
I will cry when that happens. And I would be like, fan art immediately.
Oh, there.
I need right now.
Yeah, it's going to be epic.
Oh, it's going to be so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me is wondering if maybe there's a way that Emery can get her wings healed.
Why was I just thinking that when you were thinking that? Yes, that was, I was waiting to say it because I didn't want to cut you off. But I was like, and what if somehow Emery gets her wings healed and she flies next to them?
She flies herself?
That's what I said. Or even if she just gets on a Pegasus and she gets the ability to fly again, something she's never been able to do because of her fucked up family. Ugh.
I will fucking die.
I'll cry.
God, that scene's gonna be so good. I'm gonna cry too. I'm crying right now. I'm not really, but like, I could if I thought about it.
I just wrote a whole scene in my head. I'm like, Gwyn's in the water. She's doing her river nymph shit. Emery's flying, leading a unit. Nessa's on the back of a Pegasus, like riding into battle. I can't. It's gonna be so good. And I really need it to happen. So please, Sarah, please deliver.
Yeah. If you need a writer for it, let us know.
Yeah. I can't write it, but I'll brainstorm it and then you put the words on paper.
Yeah, yeah. We'll let you know what we want to see and then you can write
it. You use your beautiful language to get the story told.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Anyway, moving on to another topic. When Lucien finds Feyre in the forest, he questions if Rhysand is controlling her mind. And that is definitely big foreshadowing because Feyre has a really good idea later on in the end of the book where she's like, oh, I'm going to act like I'm under mind control, which fuck, that was a really smart idea.
Crazy.
And part of me is, damn, maybe she started thinking about that during this because Lucien's already questioning it. I'm like, that's a good way to get out of it. Oh, I had mind control.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah. Yeah. It really allowed her to make shit happen in the next book. But yeah, it comes in clutch. And Rhys does not want her to do that. And she's just, let me cook. Like, I got this. I'm about to fuck their shit up. And I can't wait till we get there. But yes, that's such a good point that, like, would she have even had that in her mind if Lucien hadn't questioned it? Because would Feyre knows that Rhys isn't this piece of shit? Would she have even been, oh, like, I can convince them that he's controlling my mind if Lucien hadn't been like, is he controlling you? It's, oh, wait, low-key, that makes a lot of sense. Because even Feyre has to remind herself, oh, I need to pretend everything's not hunky-dory. I'm supposed to be a victim right now or whatever. And so, yeah, I don't know. But that is a really good point. I never really thought about that before. In other news, completely shifting gears, let's finally talk about what went down in chapter 48, okay, guys? We get the infamous chapters, not even infamous, they're just famous, okay, chapters in these books. We got 42, which we went over last week, Hewn City, okay? We get 48, which is today's episode. I'm gonna get into it in a second. Next week, we get 55, okay? First time I read this book, just eating the shit up. Hey, just eating up. First of all, we have our two characters that we've been waiting this whole time, being just feeding little niblets of, especially after last week with the Hewn City. They finally have their moment, okay? It's going down. They're in this tiny room and there's only one bed, okay?
Ooh.
One of my favorite tropes. Same. Already there. Coming in hard, bro. Like, what? Ooh, one bed? I wonder what's going to happen.
God, and it's not that big.
Oh, it's a small bed, too. And especially, he's got to keep his wings because he can't use magic. So he has to have his wings. And, oh, yeah, by the way, we're in this tiny attic room with a slanted ceiling. So he can't even sleep on the floor. It's so small in here. I'm like,
oh, no.
Oh, baby. I'm like, okay. I see what you're serving, Sarah. And does she serve it? Yes. About two pages later, she's giving, okay? Rhys does the whole, I'm going to touch you, but you're not going to touch me. Because when you touch me, it's going to be a moment, okay? we're going to make history. I'm going to bring down a fucking mountain, okay? So it can't happen here in this tiny inn with all these people listening. But I'm going to take care of you. I got you, girl. And he does. He takes care of her. And all I'm going to say is we all know it goes down, okay? It's epic. It's one of my favorite because it's like they haven't really fully gone there yet, but they're going there. And Rhys lays out, when I tell you, you want to talk about foreshadowing, this isn't just foreshadowing. Rhys straight up lays out what he's about to do to her in chapter 55, okay? I think it's almost word from word what ends up happening from what he says when they're before they get together. And she tries to turn around and touch him. And he's, this is what's going to happen. He's like, the first time I have you, I'm going to have you splayed out on a table like my own personal feast. Oh, man. And boy, does he deliver. Okay, we'll talk about it next week. And then also on another note, not nearly as fun, sadly, Feyre tells Rhys that she just wants fun. She wants a distraction, like I said. And that's where shit really starts to like break down between them at this point, because they're like, they're on such an up and up. They're having such a good moment. The banter is there. The tension is there. Things are finally coming together. And then Feyre has to open her big mouth and drop that she doesn't really want to be with Rhys like that. And he's hurt. And we know why, but she doesn't know why, to be fair. But then we get to such a cute, pivotal moment in this series. And it talks about a few different people here. We get a little bit of, not even information, but just like foreshadowing or explanation about all three of the Argeron sisters. Feyre is in the cave trying to help Rhys, and he's got all these ash arrows sticking in him, and she knows that she has to get them out. And the only way to do that is going to be for her to saw them. But while she's doing that, obviously they're moving around in his wings. He's in a ton of pain. To distract him, she starts to tell him about her life in the human realm before she came over to Prithian. She is talking about how one day Elaine got some extra money, and to be really sweet, she went out and bought gifts for both the sisters, and she didn't have enough to really buy her a complete paint set, but she had enough to buy her a couple little pots of paint, and she did, and I think she got yellow, red, blue, typical colors, maybe white, and she gives them to Feyre, and Feyre used them to decorate the cottage. So we know about the nightstand and the table and all the different things that she paints. But this is when she finally tells Rhys. And we also know that Rhys knows about this, which we find out in chapter 54. So can't wait to talk about that. But she's telling him about the dresser, and she tells him exactly how she painted it for each of her sisters. She said for Nesta, she painted flames to represent how angry she was and the intense burning that she always had, just like the passion and the fire that's in her that causes her to be the way that she is. Feyre's represents that as the flames. And she also comments that she thinks that Amarin and Nesta would be fast friends. And that, as we know, is some foreshadowing, because when Nesta finally does come over to Prithian and she's turned, Amarin is one of the very first people that she makes friends with. And so it's just really interesting that Feyre can see that in both of them and call it out just like that. And then for Elaine, she says she painted flowers to represent her soft demeanor, basically, her kindness, her sweetness, very much Elaine. But then she says that she thinks Elaine would cling to Asriel just to have some peace and quiet. Also very interesting, okay? Are As and Elaine a little more perfect for each other than we think? I don't know.
I was like, damn. Oh, man. Okay.
Yes. I was like, there's something here. And even Feyre, before they even meet each other, I guess they've met each other. I forgot they did meet each other. But Feyre, before they even get turned Fey and like really end up in Velaris, like she is calling this shit out, like almost word from word. I'm like, Feyre, I guess you really do know your sisters, because like she is setting that shit up. And then finally, Rhys asks her, what does she paint for herself? Which, okay. I do love Rhys, but Rhys, you knew what she painted for herself, buddy. You watched her in your dreams painting it. Well, but it's okay. I'll talk about that next week. But anyways, she says the night sky, and she wonders if some part of her knew what was waiting for her here. We get such a cute quote. Had to take it down. I would never be a gentle grower of things or someone who burned like fire. but that I would be quiet and enduring and as faceted as the night, that I would have beauty for those who knew where to look, and if people didn't bother to look but only fear it, then I didn't particularly care for them anyway. I wonder if, even in my despair and hopelessness, I was never truly alone. I wonder if I was looking for this place, looking for you all. Oh, and then Reese responds, I was looking for you too. I can't. With the context, it's really cool. Up in D4, it's just so cute.
Oh my God. Oh, it's adorable.
The setup. It's so good.
The setup is so fucking good.
It's so good. Because even right now, like, we don't know what he means when he says that. He's half delirious and about to pass out. And he's just like, oh, I was looking for you too. It's, oh my God. I love it. I love these two. I can't. Sarah did her thing here. And then, yeah, I wrote mates. I think I just was like, oh, I can just talk about this. And now I have no idea what to say about it. I feel like we talked about it a lot in the character portion. Anyways, we talked a lot about mates earlier. Obviously, it comes up at this point that it's official. They're mates. They both know that now. Reese is known a little bit longer than the rest of us. But we'll talk more about it next week. Obviously, it's a huge part of chapter 54, a huge part of the story going forward. So that revelation was huge. Let's go ahead and finish up by getting into our theories and connections to the Massverse. With that being said, we want to go ahead and give you that spoiler warning now. Thank you for staying with us this far. But if you have not read all of the books in the Sarah J. Maas universe, including the recently released House of Flame and Shadow, then please take this as your sign to exit. We hope you come back and join us next week. You should come back and join us next week because we're going to be getting into the chapter 55, okay? All right. So let's talk real quick about a little connection, really. It's not so much a theory, but it's definitely something that I noticed reading this that I thought could be a connection. Do we think that when Reese is chained up in the cave after he's been captured by the King of Highburn's men, Feyre says that he's chained up in these blue chains, that when she touches them, she feels her power draining. And she asks Reese about them, and he says that they are ancient chains that belong to the King of Highburn. Do we think that these are the same as the Gorsian shackles and the Gorsian bullets from Crescent City? Because we know that they pretty much do the same exact thing. They literally drain the power. The Gorsian bullets will stop power by going into their victim. It just seems really interesting. And for it to be ancient magic, basically, and we know that the Asteri came from Prithian, we know that. I'm wondering if these are the same thing. Or the same type of thing, at least.
It would make sense if it was the same stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't see why it
obviously has a different name. He doesn't have a name for it, but it's just really interesting that they do pretty much the same thing. And that magic items from this world are being taken over there. We know that's the case with the Star Sword, but also the poison, the same poison, like the blood vein or whatever that takes Reese's power away. Is it like very similar to or the same thing as like the, I can't remember if it's called Thaybane or what, like the Crystallos demon was like putting in people when it was biting them and nullifying their powers. It just seems very adjacent.
That's what I was actually going to bring up, because in Throne of Glass, Caltaine puts Bloodbane in Aelin's wine and it makes her hallucinate almost.
Interesting.
Which is interesting. And it says, quote, she knew they'd be powerful. The seers had once used Bloodbane as a drug to view spirits from the other world.
Right. Obviously, that's interesting, too, because it's just another connection that the people from Aurelia somehow ended up in Prithian before they ended up in Midgard. Because if it's a weapon that's in Prithian, that means it didn't just go straight from Aurelia to Midgard. So I don't know. That's really interesting. It's all leaning more towards these worlds being, every time I hear something, I know it's not the same world, but holy moly, how is it not all the same world? Like that, it's like the time adjacent thing. Like they're all the same world, but they're in different dimensions or whatever, like different on different time planes, because it's like, how does poison from Throne of Glass get to Prithian to get to Midgard? Like, obviously we know after House of Flame and Shadow that the people in Midgard come from both places, but it's just really interesting how these worlds are so similar but different. I don't know either.
It's just the way that in Silver Flames, Meryl was studying how places can overlap with each other. That's like the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Is are these just like
worlds, I don't know, overlapping?
Like same thing, but just completely different layers of stuff. It's so confused.
Yeah.
But it's a possibility because I'm like, a lot of, obviously the maps, they don't line up perfectly. But I don't think Sarah J. Maas would make it that obvious.
Yeah, it would be so obvious.
But there's just like so many things that we get where it's okay, that's like too similar.
Yeah.
It's too similar. Like, it just, I don't know. I need answers.
Yeah.
Sooner than later, please.
It's really, I don't know. It's at this point, they're different worlds. They're all happening simultaneously, but in different time periods. I don't know how to explain it.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, because it's, I don't know. I don't know, because it's like, Aurelia seems to be happening so much further in the past, but at the same time, Prithian and Midgard are happening literally at the same time, then why wouldn't that be happening at the same time? And then also, when Aelin falls through time and she sees Rhys and Feyre on the mountain, I don't know, or when she falls through worlds, rather, not time. It's what the hell? I don't know. It's they have to be happening parallel, but they can't be happening parallel if Lydia is the descendant of Aelin.
Right.
But also, a lot of people point out that Lydia isn't technically the descendant of Aelin. She's the descendant of Brannon. So technically, I guess mm-hmm. they could be coexisting at the same time and both be the descendants of Brannon at the same time. It's very confusing, but I'm definitely, it is confirmed that they're all connected. But like, exactly how is the real question? And I just like, something that still just like haunts my thoughts daily.
Same. It could go so many ways. I'm not 100% sure which one
you want.
I believe.
Yeah.
I just hope the next book at least, it doesn't give us an answer. I just hope that it at least gives us more clues to what it is, because there is a lot of contradicting information. I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah. What's up? What's down? I have no idea really, but it's, I don't know. I don't know. I love these books so much. I love it for this reason. I feel like the biggest disappointment for me with House of Flame and Shadow was that it just literally left me with more questions. I feel like almost nothing that I cared about got answered. And I feel like the few things that I did care about that got answered, I feel were a misdirection, if I'm being 100% honest. So it's like really hard for me. I'm like, dude, I feel like I read a 1,000-page book only to be in almost the same exact place that I was when I started it. Just being like,
literally,
what the fuck is actually going on? I don't know. But I'm really excited about the new unnamed series. Has she confirmed that it's Twilight of the Gods?
No.
Or is that just like a rumor?
It's a rumor. In my opinion, it's confirmed just because on her Pinterest, she had the whole like pin organized named Twilight of the Gods. And a lot of the images had to do with all the books. And then on Goodreads, under her name, it's Twilight of the Gods that's now deleted.
Okay, got it.
So I think that's where it comes from. But it makes sense knowing where the direction of these books are going.
Okay, got you. Yeah, okay, I got you. But yeah, it definitely makes me excited about like her unnamed series that to see, is this a new, I think it's going to be a new world. But is this going to be the world that we finally get the information from to find out how these worlds are all tied together? I don't know. I just.
Dude.
I need answers. If it's some a new kind world, of way, some kind of how. Oh, I believe it's a new world.
If it's a new world, we get like all new characters. I'm going to be so overwhelmed.
That's what I think it is. I could be wrong, but so I really think it is. I think it's like a whole new cast of characters and everything. I thought she said that.
I don't know if she did or not.
I
can't remember. But I know she said she was writing a new series.
Oh, of course.
I just don't remember what else she said about that. But all I'm saying is seems like I'm going to be adding another book boyfriend.
Oh, yeah.
To my list. Then.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely, she stepped, I think it's a new series, new characters, new world, personally. I do think that maybe like in the first book, we will get like connections to the other books instead of waiting until two or three books in the series. Just because, I mean, like, how many more books has this girl got in her? How many more years is she planning on writing these series that are connected? I'm going to need an end story to all of them eventually for Throne of Glass to be over and be like, oh, at least that's one series that's done. But then for her to basically open the door and be like, yeah, just kidding, these people could come back. It's a lot.
Completed.
It's a lot, dude. I'm like, I need something to be finished. And I don't necessarily want it to be ACOTAR because I'm like, give me all the ACOTAR books that you can give me. So yeah. Anyways, so I guess we'll see about these connections and if they actually add up to anything. And then something that I don't even necessarily want to talk about, because this is not necessarily my opinion. So let me make this clear. I don't think either of us is saying that we believe or don't believe this. I think we both just are talking about the possibility of it happening because it's a popular theory. But yes, there is a lot of people out there who think that Elaine and Az are actually in game, final coupling there. Plenty of theories about them being truly matched. The intention of Lucien was who she was supposed to match with, but after she went into the cauldron and got the seer ability and things changed, maybe Azriel is a better match for her now, because we all know that being mates is about being truly equally matched. And there's just, it's undeniable at this point that there is a connection between the two of them, even before she gets turned into a fae, which she doesn't have that with Lucien. And so it's really interesting. But even Feyre calls out like how she would probably cling to Azriel if she ever came to Valaris and just hold on to him for the peace and quiet. They're both like very soft-spoken, but like protective, like less is more when it comes to words. Like Elaine and Azriel aren't just out here gabbing, like they both keep their shit close to their chest, but when it matters, they stand up, they're there for their family, they're there for the people that they love. I don't know, it's just really interesting. And Elaine, like something that you pointed out earlier about Lucien having that fire, I almost feel like that's what like Elaine doesn't have, and that's why I could see Elaine and Az being more of a match. Like on one hand, it's probably good that Lucien has that fire and he can bring out that side of her. But on the other hand, as far as like their personalities go, Elaine is way more similar to Azriel than she is to like a Lucien, who's sassy, always has something to say until he meets Elaine. But yeah, I don't know. It's very interesting.
I'm going to go ahead and just say I don't really have a preference of who Elaine ends up with at all. I both really like Azriel and Lucien.
Yeah.
Pretty much equally. I love them both. So I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
It was brought up in Azriel's bonus chapter in Silver Flames, I believe, where he's like, so y'all two both get the sisters. And there's a third one. It makes sense as to why we have a connection. Mariah Sand was like, she's made it to Lucien, like blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
One of the biggest questions right now in ACOTAR is who the fuck is Elaine going to end up with? Will it be Azriel? Will it be Lucien? Will it be both of them?
Yeah. Well, I feel like also on the other hand, it's the same big ass question of who's Azriel going to end up with, because it's like, mm-hmm. Nobody's really even thinking about who Lucien's going to end up with if he doesn't end up with Elaine. But like everybody's questioning, who is Azriel going to end up with? Is it going to be Gwen? Is it going to be Elaine? It was Bryce for a minute. And so it's a huge question there about who is Azriel going to end up with. And it's just so interesting. Also, just I don't know why, but like the idea, I think it's pretty known that Sarah has come out and basically said Azriel's going to be like the shadow daddiest of them all, of all the three bad boys.
Yeah.
And it just would be so interesting if the real, real bad boy ends up with this sweet, flowery, like little dainty, woe is me, I'm so innocent, like girl. Like, it would just be really interesting. And that's why part of me is, I could see both. Like, I could see Elaine going to live with Lucien, like, in the Spring Court, and she's so Spring Court coded, and I can't see her being with Tamlin, which is a theory that I hate. And so I would prefer if it was like with Lucien, but then at the same time, like, I could see her being the last Archeron sister to end up with the last Bat Boy. I don't know. It just makes so much sense. Both sides make so much sense. It's almost like I'm going to be happy with whoever she chooses and I'm going to be upset with whoever she chooses, because like you said, I love them both equally. And so the one thing is, I feel like Az has other options, whereas I feel like if Lucien doesn't end up with Elaine, it's going to be an issue for him, especially because of the trauma that he has of his first mate, or lack of better word, who he was ready to spend his life with, being brutally killed in front of him. It just doesn't make sense. But something else to think about is, and this is crazy, right? But I don't know what the hell kind of magic the King of Highburn in the cauldron was cooking, but we do know, based on events in other books, we do know that mating bonds can be faked, okay? They can be faked. So what if, for whatever reason, the mating bond between Lucien and Elaine is actually not real, and she was supposed to mate with Azriel? I'm just saying. We know that there's sorcery. We know that the cauldron has magic. We know that Maeve literally faked the mating bond between Rowan and his Layla or whatever. And she did it with the intention of keeping Rowan away from Aelin because of how powerful, like, they would have been and all of that, and to control him. And I could just see, for some reason, of what if Elaine, I know it's been joked about before, but Elaine could end up being like the most powerful, the most badass when she comes into her full form. What if it was supposed to be Azriel? That I would eat that up, actually.
Me too. Also, it is hinted after Elaine and Lucien find out that they're mates, that mating bonds can be broken.
Yeah, that part,
which,
yeah,
that was maybe a little bit nervous for Lucien. But I will say, right now, at the end of the Akatar series, he seems to be doing okay. He's living in the mortal lands with Jurian and Vasa.
Yeah.
So I'm like, he might be having the little romance with them.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just really, I don't know. I really think about that. What if his mate really was that girl from before? Or actually, I don't know, because it has to be somebody who would have been as powerful as him, and him being a High Lord's heir. Maybe his mate hasn't been found yet. Maybe Elaine really is his mate. I don't know. But it's just interesting to think of the fact that in this universe, mating bonds can be faked. And we all know that there's a greater power at play when it comes to the cauldron here and what's going on with the whole maid magic and everything happening for a reason. Who's really pulling the strings? Just thought that I just had about it. Really, I could actually see us finding out that the mating bond between Lucien and Elaine was never real, especially with all the chaos that was going on at that moment. And then she comes out of the cauldron and Lucien immediately sees her and is like, you're my mate. I guess when Feyre was made, that was when the bond snapped into place for her.
And they never met before either.
Yeah.
Lucien and Elaine never met.
True. I don't know, bro.
I don't know. Either way, I'm cool with it. I just want to know the answer. I can worry about all the other aspects that's going to bring in, because it's, if Elaine's not with Azriel, then I guess Azriel to be with Gwyn.
Yeah.
But that part of me doesn't almost see that happening.
I feel like the Gwyn thing is, it's not that it's not possible. I see where the text alludes to it, especially with the bonus chapter in Silver Flames, if you've read it. Okay. Which, come on, Az. But anyways, I see where it's alluded to there. So it's not like the people that think that are wrong or crazy or anything like that. But I almost can't see it happening. It would be just really interesting. It almost just seems too perfect that it's supposed to be Azriel. It's just like you said, like the Archerons, the Bat Boys. How are two out of three? And then Lucien comes in here, like both of us said, I would be fine either way. I genuinely love both of them. I genuinely think they're both good options for her. I don't know why. I hate to say that because it's like such a touchy topic in the fandom. But yeah, I don't know, man. I guess we'll see.
It is an intense conversation. There's the Reddit forums I'm in are like, do not bring up shipping, like relationship shipping posts on here, or you will be blocked, because people get so mean about
it.
I'm like, okay.
Into it. They really do.
And it's like, okay, let's be fair. Okay. I would have a hard time picking between the two as well. Okay. I honestly, oh my God, like who would you choose, Lauren?
Don't ask me that. Don't ask me that. Why did you put me on the spot like that?
I don't, my gut, my like my, if you ask me that question, my immediate instinct, I think, would be Azriel. But then I think Lucian's like
literally what just happened to me. I was like, in my mind, I was like, Azriel. And then I go, wait, I go, no, because immediately I felt sadness because I was like, Lucian.
They're both like my type, but like different aspects of my type. So I'm like, I'm sorry. A beautiful man with long red hair.
I love Lucian.
Oh my God. It's been like my elf boyfriend dream. I don't understand. And then
imagine the fun we're going to have with Lucian, too. Lucian's going to be a good time.
Yeah, but then I'm also like, if I'm going to be with you, you can't be friends with Tamlin. So it'd be an issue.
In my mind.
But
yeah. Like, do you say? In my mind, once we're mated, Tamlin's dead. Like, he's gone. He's sacrificed
himself.
But
also,
himself.
It's like, if I was with Azriel, that means that I could live in the Night Court.
That's what I was just thinking.
With all the inner circle. I think I would choose Azriel.
We're on the same page because I'm like, if it's Azriel, then it's I get to live in Valaris. Like, we get to have,
like his friends are better.
I get to hang out with the other bad boys all the time. Like, also, Azriel's a certified badass, okay? But Lucian. I love Lucian. Lucian's going to be such a fun time.
Okay. You know what? I'm just going to be with Azriel, but Lucian will be, like, my side piece.
But imagine also who has the better brothers, right? Because Lucian's brothers suck ass. But Azriel's brothers are the bat boys. I don't know. Yeah.
Could be like, oh my God.
I can't pick.
Go ahead.
I can't pick. Go ahead.
I think I would choose Azriel. But then Blake ends up with Lucian. Yeah, it's fine. She ends up with him. And then I'll have Azriel.
Perfect.
And then Gwyn needs to do some healing, I think, before she gets into a relationship. But
I get why she likes Azriel, but I also think that might be part of the trauma, like Azriel being the one who saved her. Does she really like him? Or is there like the savior situation going on there? Which, I mean, it could be both, but I don't know. But yeah, that's a really tough one. I don't want to pick. I don't want to choose. First off, because I don't want my head to be bitten off. And second off, because it's just a really hard choice. I really do Lucian too. But I almost like Lucian as a best friend. I would just want him to still be around. But the problem is, if he's your mate and you decline him, he ain't going to be around. There's just no way. I don't know. It's tough.
It's tough, but that's really true about Lucian, because it's like, who would I rather have do the deed with? And I think I would choose Azriel easily.
It's both equally, like, I get the appeal of both. But for me, it's funny, on the other hand, I'm more thinking about once the deed's done, who do I want to hang out with? Who do I want to spend my time with? One-on-one. Who am I going to have better conversations with, better banter? Who am I going to stay up late talking shit with? Who's going to kiki with me about all the other bitches in Prithian? It's going to be Lucian. Azriel's going to be moody in a corner sitting over there. Lucian and me are going to go out to bars and have a good time. Azriel's going to go out to a bar and sit there and watch me while I dance and pine over me in the corner.
Yeah, but to be fair, that's literally me. So, like, I would vibe with me and Azriel just sitting in the corner watching people. And then all y'all can go dance with Moore and stuff. And I'll just in my corner and be quiet with him and awkwardly stare at people.
That's a little awkward, yeah. I would hope y'all would just go home at that point. But if there's both of y'all sitting there.
Yeah, honestly, you would just, let's just knock them out.
Yeah, there's both of y'all. But then what are you talking about at home? You see what I'm saying? Don't get me wrong. Like, I love Az. Sit there and listen to electronic music and just bump your heads to the beats.
No. If he would listen to Dark Wave, then I'd be like, yeah. And then we could just hang out and talk about, I don't know, our lives. And then he can write me poetry.
Maybe. He doesn't seem like a talker, but maybe it's in there. It's in there. He might actually write you poetry, though. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. I love both of them for different reasons. I would be fine with either of them. I really hope, though, I don't know. Like, I just need an answer. I need the Court of Blooming Darkness to come out, like, tomorrow. Okay. Please. I need to know. I need it to be – I need ACOTAR 6 to be Elaine's book, and I need it in my hands.
That name fucking slaps. That name is amazing. Okay. Why should that be the fucking name?
I need it to be because I'm like, if it's a Court of Blooming Darkness, I'm going to know what's up. Yeah, I don't know. But anyways, all right, guys, that has been a fun little discussion. What an interesting lead up to next week's episode. If you guys are still with us, we hope that you enjoyed our discussion on A Court of Mist and Fury today. Make sure that you tune in next week if you're like us and chapter 54 is life for you, okay? We are chapter 54 girlies, all right? We know that the chapter 55 girlies are out there. And while I do have mucho respect for chapter 55, chapter 54 is where it's at. It's the whole experience, what I'm here for. So make sure you join us for that. If you have any theories or anything you'd like us to touch on relevant to those chapters, make sure you reach out to us through DM or email. Email will be listed in the comments or in the description below. And finally, again, if you're still here, please make sure you like and subscribe as well as drop a comment below. If you don't know what to comment, hit us with a flower for Elaine. And make sure you're subscribed. All right, guys, if you're listening on a podcast platform, please rate and review us. And either way, please share us with your bookish friends. We're always trying to grow our community. We recently reached 1,000 followers over on Instagram. So if you're not already following us on our social medias, go give us a follow over on TikTok and Instagram. We have a ton of fun over there. A really good time, different memes, different bookish contents, different information on all of the different romanticy novels that are going on, as well as what's coming in future episodes. And with that being said, I want to go ahead and let you guys know now, if you're not on our social media, after we finish our deep dive of Akamath in a couple weeks, we will be taking a short break from the ACOTAR series. We will be focusing on a couple other books, romanticy novels that we've read recently, including Lightlark, Nightbane, and A Fate Inked in Blood. So if you're interested in reading those or hearing us talk about them, make sure you get to those before May 14th. That will be the last day of our ACOTAR. And then I think there's going to be a month or so before we jump back in with our ACOWAR deep dives, which we're actually super excited about. So that being said, thank you guys for being here. We appreciate you greatly. We love you all. And as always, we want to go ahead and leave you guys with a quote. This is actually one of my favorite quotes from the entire series. When you spend so long trapped in the darkness, you find the darkness begins to stare back. All right, guys. Bye.